I don't know if my next issue this afternoon is something nightmarish or something wondrous. I haven't got my head around it yet. Probably because I'm tall, I'm going to think it's nightmarish. Let me tell you what the story is. Australia's flagship carrier, Qantas, they're preparing apparently to like redefine long haul travel. They've come up with a thing called Project Sunrise, which is flights leaving from Melbourne and Sydney, going to New York or London non-stop. That's 17,000 kilometers more or less in a tube of metal without stop for 22 hours. Putejo Mochapele is our aviation analyst and expert, and we're going to be chatting about this either genius or insanity, I'm not sure what. Putejo, good afternoon to you, and thanks for chatting to me this afternoon.
Good afternoon, Simon, and to the listeners. Thank you for having me this afternoon.
I don't know where to begin. Project Sunrise. I mean, why have they called it that, and why are they doing this? Qantas, that is.
Right. Just before COVID in 2019, the was
Have I
conducted by
lost you?
Qantas from London all the way to Sydney. Currently, Qantas is running a service between London with a stopover in Changi Airport in Singapore, which basically reduces those 22 hours to be, well, it's not reducing, but
It's
you're just
extended, huh?
stopping. So then they entered into this uncharted territory, of trying something beyond the limit. Then at the time there was two operators, which was Boeing as well as the Airbus. Now they did try this Project Sunrise. So what happens is that the flight takes off out of London at 6 o'clock in the morning, or just before 6 o'clock. I think it's around 5:45 in the morning, heading to Sydney. Now, so that's Sunrise out of Europe, and then it heads on to Australia. It gets to Australia at the sunrise. So it leaves sunrise and
It
it
arrives
gets to
sunrise.
Australia at another sunrise. Does it make sense?
Yes, it does make perfect sense. It just sounds horrendous beyond belief. How many miles is this? 22 hours translates to how many miles?
Yeah, so we're looking at about 17,000. So it's about 22 hours. But we must also remember that there was a lot of medical expeditions that were done during the time of the testing. And when they were testing this thing, it was done on a Boeing aircraft, which was the 787-9. And then Qantas went back and say, look, we're going to have to go and do some modification and look at which aircraft can be suitable for this route. And unfortunately, Boeing lost on that to Airbus. Then Airbus created something similar. But what they did not do it for Project Sunrise, but they did it for Singapore Airlines. So Singapore Airlines is currently the longest flight on Earth, 18 hours from Changi, Singapore to New York. They are operating with the same aircraft that Qantas is going to be utilizing for Project Sunrise, which is the Airbus A350-900, 1000 extra long range, ultra long range aircraft. So they have done that. Now with the 350, it's all carbon fiber material. It's a composite material. It's very light on fuel. It's got Rolls-Royce engines, and so on. So what it's going to do is that it's going to be something that we will be watching closely, because it's going to be a very long aircraft. I don't know how many people would be going to enjoy that flight.
I'm just trying to get my head around the fact that you're saying the Airbus is better than the Boeing. Is it purely because of the materials that go into the construction that allow it to fly those distances, or is it more than that?
It is more than that. So Look at this. Airbus, the aircraft, it's more technical in a sense that the computer itself does a lot of work for more than what the pilot could do. In a sense that in terms of strain that can be put on the pilot who's operating a flight at a particular time is going to be transferred into a computer system, which is what we call fly-by-wire. Now, the fly-by-wire system, it's got multiple computer system that can basically coordinate with all the sensors that are on board the aircraft. One of the biggest thing also, which is the major breakthrough for them, is the fact that they are going to be using the Rolls-Royce engines, which is very much fuel efficient and the most powerful engines that you can find on Earth. And that's one of the biggest thing that they have done with this. And Rolls-Royce, with the Airbus fuselages and so on, it has been proven that they have done something that is very much market friendly. And as we speak right now, if you go on the market and try to buy, let's say you buy in 787 Dreamliner, and then you also try to get a 350. 350 will be more expensive than 787, yet they are the same sort of in the same range. So it is for that reason that the more technological aspects of flying get improved on a particular aircraft, the more customers would go for it. And it also reduces the operational costs in terms of maintenance, because everything can be reported while the flight is on the skies. When it gets on the ground, the technical knows exactly what they need to work on, because they already have the information, which is what is nice about the Airbus.
Take me inside the plane itself. In what ways would it be different from a regular plane? And I'm thinking about if they altered the cabin design in any way. What sort of modifications would they have done to, say, onboard service in that could help passengers cope with like this extreme fatigue that's got to hit you after 22 hours of flying?
With the Project Sunrise, when it was tested, because I was quite really involved, not involved in a sense that but I was really into that, and to have a look at what is it that would be coming out of that. So one of the things that Qantas have clarified that they are going to do, as you know, most of the airlines now, they only delete they have done away with the first class. So you would ordinarily have
Correct.
a normal business class, and then you would have what we call premium economy, and then you would have your normal kettle class, which is the coach. We call it, maybe I use the wrong word, but
Very
kettle class,
familiar
but
with
that's how we refer
it.
it. Then you would have that. But what we think is going to do is, instead of you having a normal 32-inch recliner, you may end up with about maybe 35 or 36, but preferably I think 35 will be fine for the passenger who will be behind you, so
Yes,
that you
that
are able to do
that's
that. I think that would be for somebody who's tall. I'm not sure if you are tall. If you are
No, I
tall,
am tall and I
then
know what you're talking about because I make a point of checking the sizes of the seats and I'm thinking there are no economy seats that I can think of that are 36, that give you 36 inches. None. 32, 33, 34, I've seen. 36 is really generous. That's more like a premium economy seat.
Something like that. I think that's what we're looking at for the passengers to cope with that. This is not going to be ordinary flight, I must say. It's going to be something that when you get into that flight going to Australia from London or from New York, then you should condition yourself that for 22 hours, meaning that morning to morning, You start in the morning, which is on 6 o'clock, and then the next morning on the next day. That's basically how long you're going to be sitting on the aircraft. So that is not going to be something that is easy. So mentally, people need to prepare themselves. It has to be something that you're getting into it with a clear mind that you something might happen within 24 hours if you are going to be sick. If you happen to collapse, it might be a bit of a disaster because 24, 22 hours is a long time. I remember just to add, when South African Airways launched New York, Washington, not New York, but Washington, many years ago. It was at the time it was regarded as one of the longest flight on earth at that particular time, from Johannesburg to Washington. It was close to 16 and a half hours at the time, and then
Charleston.
later, then Delta came in, and then they then moved South African Airways because it was going further to Atlanta out of Johannesburg, which is about 17 hours.
Wow, but this is still significantly longer than that. So, quite a challenge. Operationally, how are the pilots and crew going to manage with it? You're going to have duplicate crews?
Yes, so this is an ultra long service. So what usually happens is that you are going to have primary crew and secondary crew. Now, the primary crew usually does the takeoff and the landing, but during the mid-air, then the secondary crew take over for, but they're only allowed to sit on the control for 6 hours. But
Oh,
they
wow.
obviously spread in between so that they shouldn't rest for long. So it's going to be two sets of pilots. It might be more than that, but I'm not sure how they're going to split it. But I think four sets, as in two sets of pilots, would definitely be able to manage that ultra long service.
Just two more questions for you. So, when could the public expect to be able to be booking these flights?
They're looking at next year sometime. That's when they are looking at. At the moment, the aircraft has not been released out of Toulouse in France. It's still at the plant. They have just completed the fuselage, and the communication is that they are going to be updating us stage by stage, which is Airbus is going to be updating the public stage by stage as to when the aircrafts will start to be delivered. And obviously, there will be some few tests that are going to be run between the cities to make sure that it perform optimally. So it's going to be having what we call a center tank, which is the tank that would be right in the center. Remember, the all the tanks of the aircraft, they are on the winglets, they are on the wings, and they take quite a lot. So with this one, you are now going to have an extra tank, which is going to be on the belly, which we call it a center tank. Now,
Oh,
that center
wow.
tank would be the one that is going to be taking quite substantial amount so that it can reach the 22 hours that they are anticipating to have. It might be less than that, depending on the wind and
Sure.
the
No,
temperature.
that's regular. That makes
Yes.
sense. Final question.
Yes.
Is this a gimmick or is this for real? Do you see it being sustainable?
Well, it is not currently it's not sustainable for what they are doing with the stopover. Remember, the stopover it comes with a lot of costs. If I do a technical stop in, let's say I'm going to Washington and I do a stopover in Dakar, Senegal, out of Johannesburg, or I do it in Accra, Ghana, when you get there, the landing fees you pay. Every little thing that you do there, you pay. So you are basically paying double. Even if you can pick up some passengers, even worse, because you're going to be paying for each passenger that you process to get into the flight, you pay. So when you fly direct, the charges are airport to airport. It's not you're not going to transfer the money that you're supposed to be making into another destination and then carry on. So it will be a success. I think technology has improved, and the more it's improving, the more we are going to see more and more airlines exploring opportunities of doing these ultra long services.
Potejo Mojapele, thank you for chatting to me today. I do have to tell you, the thought of going on a flight like that, I cannot think of anything worse. I think back to the time I stayed in Australia for 3 or 4 years. During that whole time, I never went to Europe once. There was no ways I was going to tackle a 24, 25, 26 hour flight. Not gonna happen.